This is In Truth, a Star Trek reboot fanfic written by Mint Amaretto, read by Raina Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13 and contains the pairings Kirk McCoy with mentions of Spock Uhura and Sulu Chekov. Warnings for AU and dubious consent. Little things pile up. Bones doesn't want anyone but Jim and doesn't mind Jim fucking around. His intellect is a challenge, but not competition. His sarcasm is all the more entertaining for being unintentional. It's impossible to be bored with Bones. It's really convenient that Jim's best friend is a doctor, always available to patch him up. His grumbling only serves to underscore how much he cares. Bones lets Jim drag him to various bars, to his Kobayashi Maru tests, to parties he hates with a burning passion. He is capable of saying no to Jim. He just never goes through with it. He's way hotter than any halfway alcoholic doctor has a right to be. Much too skilled between the sheets for a man who's been married to a woman for 8 years. Bones has no friends from before the academy. He talks about his daughter, bitches about the ex-wife. Jim's never seen him on the vidphone with either of them. The vast, ever-present depth of fear and misery in Bones' mind is the best reassurance that he'll never leave, and makes him need Jim without asking for anything from him. For the longest time, Jim doesn't notice. His life has been shaped by luck, both good and bad, for as long as he can remember. Too good to be true doesn't figure in it. It just means he hit the jackpot big time. Someone out there is bound to have everything they ever wanted or needed. Why shouldn't that someone be Jim? The sickbay's floor is strewn with the bodies of surgically altered Klingons, Bones standing in the middle, laser scalpel still clasped in his hand. "Oh, perfect. Now you come," he says, as soon as he sees Jim, and then grumbles almost to himself. "I hate those lobster-headed bastards." He's more gray than pale. Two wide eyes bulging up. Jim is by his side before he can think about it, clutching onto him, heart clenching at the way the body in his arms is trembling. Jim kisses Bone's neck, his stubbled cheek and the corner of his mouth, wipes away the blood, someone else's, thank you God, from his forehead, dizzy with relief even though he didn't know Bones was in danger. He has no idea how Bones, of all people, managed this, and he doesn't even care. Over Bones' shoulder, Jim can see Nurse Chapel's shocked, terrified face. For a moment, he finds it strange that she's staring at Bones and not at the carnage around them. But then the scalpel clatters to the ground, and Bones' hand clenches in the back of Jim's shirt, and Jim stops thinking of anything but this. He does think about it that night, with Bones a warm, reassuring presence next to him on the bed. "It's just dumb luck," he tells himself. Bones had the element of surprise on his side. The Klingons were careless, too sure. Still, it bothers him, the efficiency with which the bodies were dispatched, the way Bones doesn't have a scratch on him. A blessing, yet an incomprehensible one. Jim isn't used to having no explanation. He runs his hand down Bones' naked back, smooth, still covered with a thin sheen of cooling sweat. Bones doesn't stir. His even breathing doesn't falter. From the very beginning, it's been like this, as if he's wired to trust Jim, to welcome his touch. Jim wonders at how Bones had burrowed his way into Jim's life 6 years ago, fast and easy, until it felt like they'd always known each other. He remembers suddenly their first time. Bones, after an 18-hour shift, half incoherent with exhaustion and so needy, surging hard and slick in Jim's hand, panting open-mouthed against his mouth. Bones had fallen asleep immediately after, rolled over on his belly and damn near passed out. Jim waited for that urge to bolt, the one he got about 30 seconds after getting off. But this time it didn't come. Bones didn't take up too much space on the bed and didn't snore, and he smelled good, like sex and Jim in deep sleep. Jim was bone-tired as well, so he stayed and slept and woke up to a slow blowjob, an indication of the fact that while Bones wouldn't have minded if Jim had left, he really liked that Jim had stayed. And with such incentive, it wasn't really surprising that Jim always spent the night after that. "There's something not quite right," Jim thinks now. "Something not quite fitting in the 20 dead Klingons in the morgue, most of their faces still wearing expressions of almost comic surprise, in the way that, conversely, no one from the senior crew seems bothered. Sulu, maybe, who had swallowed thickly while staring at all the body parts. But no one else." Scotty had whistled, appreciatively, and clapped Bones on the back. Spock's outward cool indifference was usual, but the almost imperceptible stiffness in his shoulders wasn't, and the calm curiosity on Uhura and barely 20-year-old Chekhov's faces is etched into Jim's mind, all the more shocking in two people who've seen so little battle up close, who are so very compassionate as a rule. So very compassionate, just like Bones is. Bones, who is the most right thing in Jim's life, and who is all of a sudden a mystery niggling at Jim's brain, not making sense. Worse is the suspicion that Bones has not made sense for a long time, possibly from the beginning, and Jim just never noticed before now. Jim doesn't want to think about that, needs a distraction, so he wakes Bones. Jim nips at his nape until Bones stirs, grumbling about sex addicts not leaving him to his rest. He still turns around willingly enough, lets Jim fuck him hard, possessive, still keyed up from almost losing his best friend. Bones loves it, arches into it, groaning deep in his throat. His fingers dig into Jim's biceps, shoulders press impatient into the small of his back, before shifting higher. While all the while Bones curses, begs for more, letting Jim know that he's there, that he's alive, just like Jim needs. Bones always gives him exactly what he needs. "You ever get the feeling something's wrong?" Jim asks Spock, the next time they're catching up on Jim's paperwork, alone in his quarters. He can't quite ever bring himself to tack with Bones at the end of the question. Spock might think he's asking for relationship advice or something equally horrifying. "I'm afraid I'm not aware of your meaning, Captain. If you would elaborate," Spock answers, not even looking up from the requisition form on his datapad. As always, he's making Jim work for it. "I mean, do you ever feel like people aren't real? Like they are almost illogically perfect?" Spock looks up at that. Sharply, and for a moment even he can't rein in his emotions. The look is mostly familiar, grudgingly impressed, like always when Jim shows what Spock considers intelligence. Only underneath it there's a flicker of something else, something darker, guilt or shame or hunger, or maybe some combination of the three. It's gone too fast to decipher, and then Spock's face is the usual placid mask. "I wouldn't dwell on it, Captain," he says, lowering his eyes again to the work at hand. "In fact, I don't." Jim opens his mouth to press him for an explanation, then stops. Spock's posture, his whole bearing, screams that the matter is closed, that Jim isn't getting anything else from him. That's all right. Now that Jim is sure there's something to know, he'll find out on his own. Even if he is inescapably, awfully sure that he won't like the answer. Jim digs up Bones' file, all the information that he can get his hands on. Bones is supposed to not have any family except for his ex, and Jim can't find a way to contact her, no matter how much effort he puts into it. He's desperate enough to call passing acquaintances of Bones instead, his old med school professors. No one remembers him, save for the nutty extraterrestrial anatomy professor, who first declares Bones as a woman, and then a 5-foot bow-legged Scotsman. On paper, Bones has led a convincing, unremarkable life. In reality, there's no evidence he ever existed before that shuttle flight to the Academy when he entered Jim's life. He's never been a coward. Never been able to let sleeping dogs lie. Even, especially, when the consequences are as potentially devastating as now. "Why do you put up with me, Bones?" Jim starts that night. Watches Bones so at ease, sprawled shirtless on Jim's couch, head flung back, eyes closed, tension leaking slowly out of his body. He looks like he'd rather be here than anywhere else, and Jim can't stand it. Can't stand the chance that it's all a lie.
"What?"
Bones asks, attention instantly diverted to Jim.
"What's that about?"
"You heard me," Jim replies, quietly. He didn't realize before now just how furious he is.
"Why do you stick with me, you son of a bitch?"
Bones' eyes are dark now, confused, a little hurt.
"I sometimes wonder about that myself," he mutters.
Jim's hand finds its way to Bones' nape, helpless, fingers sliding into the short, soft hair there. Bones lets him, of course, even though Jim is acting like a huge asshole now.
"Were you assigned to me, Bones?" "Have you finally gone all the way nuts?"
Bones answers, worried now, looking so damn sincere. Not at all like a man who's been caught in a 6-year-old lie and trying hard to cover his ass, deflect the attention away from him. No one is such a good liar, and yet...
"What do you get out of this, then?"
Jim repeats, as flat as he can manage, trying to maintain his front, trying to keep the anger, fear, and naked hope from cresting on the surface.
"Out of you and me, what's your gain?"
The muscles on Bones' front bunch up, colors swelling on his face and chest. He looks down at his hands, then to the side, as if Jim's wall is the most captivating thing he's seen all day. Then finally, looks Jim square in the face.
"Are you gonna make me say it, Jim?"
Bones breathes out, gruff, accent grown more pronounced, like always when he's angry or nervous out of his mind. And this is it for Jim. This is more than any man can handle. Whatever is wrong, he can't stomach punishing Bones for it, even if he could believe it's all Bones' fault. It's easy to draw Bones in, to whisper, "Yeah, me too," into his skin. To hold on and lose himself in his best friend's generous mouth. He calls in some favors then, snoops around the fleet, attempting to be careful for once. He is painfully bad at it, apparently, because Admiral Pike's office calls to arrange a personal meeting next time they're on Earth. Jim takes a flight to the Admiral's home, alone, not even a little annoyed that he's missing on his rare off time. If anything, he is jittery, spoiling for a fight. If Pike thinks he can order him to stop digging, he has another thing coming. Pike's wife answers the door. She's beautiful. Surely a stunner once upon a time, aging well. She gives Jim a cordial smile, offers him iced tea before pointing him into the back garden, where she says Christopher is tending to the roses. It's the strangest prelude to a chewing out that Jim's ever gone through. "You know, you could have just asked," Pike says, once they're sitting on the back steps, giving Jim one of his little smiles, the ones that imply he's laughing at a joke you're not aware of. "And the joke's on you." "It's a point in your favor with the brass. Means you're even smarter than they gave you credit for." This conversation is most definitely not going the way Jim expected it to. Good thing he's used to rolling with the punches. "Yeah, well, I wanted the details. Didn't think I'd get those by asking, so..." Jim shrugs, looks away. He's always been good at affecting dispassion when he feels like it, and he's had Spock as a role model for the last 3 years. He still can't tell if Pike falls for it, but he does keep on talking, and that's all Jim really wants. "It's nothing personal, just standard procedure for all the first-rate vessels. And yours is the best, the flagship." Pike pauses, takes a drink out of his lemonade, looking over his blooming garden. For a moment, the only sound is the buzz of the sprinklers. Or it would be, if not for the maddening, irregular beat of Jim's heart in his temples, in his neck.
Frankly, son, I thought you'd wise up much sooner than this. Did you really believe geniuses willing to serve in medium, not at all well-paid positions in Starfleet grow on trees? Ones who are gagging to be the commanding officer's personal horrors at that? Who? Jim asks. He feels utterly, unnaturally calm for once, mostly because he can't believe any of this right now. This is a simulation, a hallucination, an alien thought experiment. He might as well keep Pike talking, just for the hell of it. Uhura, Scott, the Russian ensign. Your friend, Bones, was it? Of course. Pike's mouth wraps obscenely around Bones' name, the word rolling on his tongue fat and nasty, and for a second Jim's calm shatters. He sees himself hitting Pike again and again, turning his face into mush, can almost feel the blood on his hands, the bones shattering. Then he remembers that this isn't really happening. He remembers he needs to know more, and the rage recedes as abruptly as it turned up. The captain and first officer are always born and bred sentient beings. It's something in the drones. They can't make command decisions, can't think outside the box. And the pilot's human, too. The only thing that makes a good pilot is practice. How is it done? Next question. One at a time, Jim. Easy does it. Pike just watches on, amused. Programming. Erasing what's there and putting the right personality in, based on their future position and the psychological profile of the officer they'll be assigned to. No, Jim says. Sure, now. No, I met Bones the morning after I enlisted. I wasn't an officer. I was a nobody. And no one could have made Bones up for a few hours. About that, Pike retorts, raising his finger as if Jim has reminded him of a task that slipped his mind. I didn't look up your file while you were on the floor. A good thing you showed up at that bar. I sure didn't want to spend another day in that one-horse town looking for you. He shrugs, casual. Letting you meet your new pet in the shuttle seemed as good a time as any. Jim closes his eyes. He thinks of Uhura. Stunning, ambitious, brave Uhura. Such a talent for languages. Interested in no one but Spock. Of Chekhov. Cheerful and modest and so useful, hero-worshipping Sulu. Of Scotty, left on a dead-end planet with no distractions and all the time in the world to perfect transporter travel, assigned to a ship the moment future Spock gave them just that on a silver platter. Of Bones. Loyal, funny, brilliant, beautiful Bones, who is all Jim's. Who loves Jim. Who was fucking programmed to love him. Jim swallows and asks the next question. Why me, man? Pike looks serious now, earnest and concerned like that night in the bar. Jim wonders vaguely how much of it is an act. A man grows older, wiser, finally decides to honor his familial obligations. He nods to his wife, visible through the kitchen's open window. We never got round to having children of our own, you know. There's one final question burning in Jim's mind. The most important of all. Who was he before? Doesn't matter. Someone who isn't missed. Play your cards right, go on as you've been so far, and you'll get to keep him. There's no such thing as no-win scenario, son. They sit next to each other a little longer, watching Pike's pretty, friendly, perfect wife chop vegetables for dinner, humming. Jim was supposed to take a shuttle back that same night. He doesn't. He goes to a bar, drinks until he's seeing double, starts a fight with the ugliest, meanest fucker he can find. He lets the guy paste him for a while, then starts punching back for real. He leaves the guy mangled on the floor and fucks his girlfriend in a back alley. It's all well until he comes back to the hotel and four messages from Bones. Then it hits him. Bones doesn't exist. Bones calls him not because he cares, but because he was made that way. Bones doesn't give a fuck about him. And all those times he fucked Bones, all those times Bones said, shouted, demanded. Yet it really wasn't Bones. It wasn't really anyone. Jim's been using some poor bastard's body. Someone who doesn't know him or care for him, and who never consented to... He gets to the refresher in time to puke his guts out. At some point, the tears streaming down his face join the bile coming out his throat in a steady stream of poison. Jim spends the week whoring across the Midwest and ignoring Bone's calls. He calls Ahura to tell her he's not dead, and even her face is enough to make him want to throw himself off the nearest bridge. On the last day, he meets Spock in a cafe in San Francisco. Spock is wearing shorts, pressed and pristine, managing to look terribly out of place and hilarious at the same time. It's strange, somehow unexpected, that life goes on in all its absurd glory, even when Jim Kirk wishes it didn't. Spock knows about this, and hasn't done anything. He probably came here straight from Uhura's tiny apartment, slipped out of her bed to come meet Jim. Jim's not sure how he feels about that. Spock says, "The process of personality erasure is irreversible. Should you protest or resign, Dr. McCoy will simply be reprogrammed and assigned to a different ship." Spock says, "She inquires tirelessly about my needs. She offered to join me on New Vulcan. If it's any consolation for you, Captain, I suspected nothing for 2 years." Spock says, "I would never willingly forbear her company." In the end, Jim still doesn't have any idea what to do. He goes to Bone's place because he wants to see him, and not because he's come to a decision. Bones looks grumpy and sad, or maybe just hungover. He hasn't bothered to shave and has pillow creases on his cheek and temple. Jim wants him so damn much he can almost taste Bones' skin in his mouth. Jim wanted to know the truth, thought that would make a difference. It doesn't. Not to his actions, not even to his feelings all that much. The man before him is still the most important person in his life, the same he was a week ago. When push comes to shove, Jim can live without his clear conscience. He can't do this without Bones. Maybe if Jim had never met him, he would have been able to. Maybe not. As it is, he doesn't want to find out. Jim fists one hand in Bones' tattered, ugly shirt, hauls him close. Their lips bump together, and Jim moans at Bones' closeness, at the smell and heat of his skin. Bones braces a forearm on Jim's chest, tries to push him away even as the fingers of his other hand are digging into Jim's hip. "Damn it, Jim, you can't just take off and leave me high and dry and expect me to..." Jim cuts him off, biting at Bones' lower lip. It tastes like whiskey and salt, and Jim licks, has to, tongue rasping against coarse stubble. Bones won't hold off, has never been able to, and now that Jim knows why, knows for sure that Bones won't change his mind and ditch him for someone better, he loves Bones even more. Jim wants to tell him he's going to make more of an effort now, try harder to make Bones happy, but he's too busy kissing to bother. A few hours later, Jim leaves Bones asleep, tucked warm in the middle of the bed, and goes out onto the balcony to contemplate the future. He's always known he was a bastard. Always tried to keep himself in check, hurt himself and not others. Keep him, that's rich. If there's anything the last few days have taught Jim, it's how very few people actually matter. He stays there, staring into the darkness, barely dissipated by the city light's weak, pitiful glow, with Bones safe and near and ignorant. He plans, carefully, the way he never bothered before. Starfleet Command won't know what hit them. Hell, the universe won't either. Bones might be the one whose consciousness was downloaded, but Jim is just as artificial, just as made up. Everybody is, more or less. The only difference is Jim is the one who's free. The end.